Hi there, I'm JP Morgenthau, and I'm the host of AI in Motion. It's the podcast that's all about artificial intelligence in supply chain manufacturing. This is episode one. I hope you hit subscribe, and I see you at episode 100. But before then, why should you listen to me? What credibility do I have with you? Let me use this episode to establish a little bit of that. The agenda is I'll give a brief introduction to who I am, and then I'm going to give an overview of artificial intelligence and why I think that it has great opportunity in the area of supply chain management and manufacturing. All right, let's get started. So what have I done that makes a difference? Well, the first thing is that I have personally been involved building solutions for over 30 years, really innovative solutions, like for companies like Citibank and Barclays and Cheyenne Software. I've done really innovative stuff. When Java came out, I was Mr. Java. When XML came out, I was Mr. XML. And I don't say those things lightly. I was really listed as Mr. Java and Mr. XML. I had a book out at the time XML was getting big. I had column in top trade publication. I also was the editor-in-chief of something called XML Journal. So when I say I was Mr. XML, I don't take that lightly. But when I got started, I was, you know, I had learned some great things. And my first one, my first real job out of college was with Citibank, and I built this really innovative, what you would call today RPA application. Back then we called it screen scraping. But I saw the power of automation at work in business. What I had built for them was new and novel to them, but I took a process that, you know, was being handled by 15, 20 people, in a facility in Long Island, and I basically automated it. And I saw that what they did was then take my creation, and they created a room where they put three of these computers in, and they closed down that center. Maybe they repurposed it, whatever they did. I saw the power. I saw the immediate impact of what I did on the business, on saving money. And so ever since then, I've had the Joneses for automation and integration, because you could immediately see the impact of your work on the business itself. And I think for young people, that's such an important thing that they don't get out of the gate. Young people, when they join the business world, you know, we put them in these positions where they're so buried in the mundane that they don't actually ever understand how the business works or what their value is to the business or how it impacts. And if you did allow them to see that, oh, I'll get off my soapbox now, you get it. But, you know, these early opportunities out of the gate, they really didn't provide any insights about supply chain management. Sure, I knew about finance. I knew about even entertainment. The one that really started opening my eyes to this world of supply chain management was a business of mine got acquired by XML Solutions, a company that was building the first EDI to XML translator. Now, if you're familiar with the EDI world, it was for many years the way businesses communicated electronically. But the problem with EDI is it's fragile. If you put the wrong bit in the wrong place, boom, your document never ever gets processed. There's delays. And in some of these cases, those delays cost money. And we created or took this emerging structure format called XML that was a hybrid or a derivative of what was running the World Wide Web at the time, HTML. And we used it to encapsulate all the EMI data in such a way that you didn't have to worry about whether you put something in the wrong place anymore. And so people started being able to exchange these documents without these delays, without these exceptions being introduced, and it was huge, right? It became the centerpiece for exchanges, groups of businesses that were of similar commercial classification, all working together or doing business together through a common group, maybe a buying group or something like that. So I rapidly got introduced into the world of supply chain management because 70 to 80% of what EDI was being used for was supply chain management document exchange. And so the one of our executives left there, went to this other company, became the CEO, and brought me over as his CTO there. It was called Ikimbo. And Ikimbo, back in 2000, 2001, was really Teams or Slack way before those things were even realities. And the we were taking this collaborative technology and we're wrapping it around the supply chain and enabling businesses to communicate over the internet with other businesses in a collaborative way that were all part of a common supply chain. So if I bought a product from you and I had a shipment that had a defect, I could quickly get you into a conference along with my people to better understand how we can resolve this quickly. And we started working with General Motors and seeing if we could apply this to their Doraville plant when they had a line stoppage for a similar reason, and seeing how they could use this technology to bring people together quickly to speed the time to resolution, because when a line is down at a plant, a lot of money is being lost. And it was a great use case. I presented at Supply Chain World with General Motors around this particular topic, and a very exciting time. I wish the company could have seen more life, but unfortunately, you know, it was 2001, and we all know what happened then. Then I was offered the opportunity to start my own software company to help out a 60-store retail chain that sold auto parts. Company was had built their warehouse management system themselves on our AS400 RPG. They had one developer in-house who was responsible for the entire system. And let's just say it was legacy and it was on its last legs. And the answer was, well, what are we going to do? I came in initially as a consultant to help out, and I saw an opportunity to create this new layer of something that we now call web services. At the time, they were not really defined or as well defined as they are now. But I created these HTML-based services that layered on and connected to their back-end data and dynamically changed, digitally transformed VIP Auto. And in fact, I'll put a link to a video in the show notes that talks about this digital transformation and what it did for them. And, you know, it just changed the business. And the level of improvements were unheralded. And they won an award from R.L. Polk for that. So very proud of that. Again, warehouse management, distribution, logistics, store fulfillment, retail management, cycle counting, all of that were processes that I rebuilt on top of my platform once these services were embedded. And it was quite an eye-opening and learning experience that was really enabled. And then DXC, DXC was the merger of what formerly was EDS and Computer Sciences Corp, largest SI, independently owned. And opportunity to work with manufacturers of the likes of Chrysler, where they were, you know, one of our customers around for managed services on their MES system, and getting to talk to them from an applications perspective and how do you manage when you have a centralized mainframe-based MES system and distributed plants all over the world, and the opportunity for the connection between those plants to go down. So, Yeah, I feel like I got some chops in this stuff, and I'm really excited to now take my knowledge in artificial intelligence and start to apply it to the problem domain here in supply chain management and manufacturing. Now, let's talk about this AI stuff. Okay, let's get real. People that know me know I'm the pragmatic guy. I'm not a fanboy. I'm not going to jump, oh, this is the greatest thing. Oh, this will cure cancer. Oh, this is wonderful. Oh, it's a silver bullet. Oh, you got to do it tomorrow or your business is going to go under. It's good stuff. It's heading in an interesting direction. Google DeepMind, when they were independent standalone company, they trained models to be able to predict how proteins fold, something people had tried to do for decades and were unsuccessful. And they were able to, it took them years, but what they finally got to a point where they predicted accurately, 100%, how a sequence of acids, amino acids, would fold into a protein. Huge. The applications are still just being figured out. New diseases, and basically the complete catalog of every protein that could ever exist on the planet that we know of. Diseases, bacterias, you know, human DNA, all of it, right? How is it folded? How is it created? But those models, why they are the underpinning of today's commercialized AI technology, they were specialized. So everything starts from this thing called the model. The model is a representation of a knowledge base. And that representation of that knowledge base in a n-dimensional space. Now that sounds like math, Einstein, let's get on a window, beautiful mind. Or it can be. There are people in labs in Stanford that do that stuff. But you don't need to understand it in order to appreciate what it can do and how to use it, which is great. Because that means that there's a daily life application. So, now I'm all about, let's do a visualization, right? I like making things simple for people. Remember these? Rubik's Cube, right? So, imagine that this is your token space, right? So, a token is a way to represent knowledge in the knowledge base. It might be a single character, could be a string, could be an entire sentence, could be a book, could be an object in an image. Token can represent anything. And the thing is that in the universe, tokens have proximity to other tokens, right? So the proximity of the color of a sky, blue, is usually in close proximity to the word sky. So blue and sky are near each other in a lot of knowledge-based material. Okay, so we take all this data. All this data becomes tokens. The tokens get stored in the Rubik's Cube, and they get stored next to each other. So let's say that the word color is 3, and the word sky is 4. So they have a proximity to each other. So somebody says, what is the color of the sky? So it's going to go through its knowledge base and dimensional. And this, you may have heard a company called NVIDIA and wonder, why the heck are these GPUs so important? Because when you start to do mathematical calculations on n-dimensional objects like this, you need to do very fast matrix mathematics. And that's what GPUs do better than CPUs. They are specialized hardware to be able to do matrix multiplication. And that's what you need to do in order to search this token knowledge base very quickly. So I take a bunch of strings, a bunch of images, a bunch of data. I break it all down into a common element called a token. And then I stick the tokens in there and I label them in such a way that I know they're near each other. And then somebody says, what's the color of the sky? Well, the sky is 3 in this example right here. Now we'll make sky the color 3. And so this LLM, large language model, the inference engine that sits on top of it, goes through and it asks from this knowledge base, okay, What should be the next word? Well, I found the 4, which is orange, I found 6, which is blue, and I found 5, which is gray. All valid answers. All high probabilities could be the right answer, but there's weightings. And the thing is, in the world of knowledge that's been captured, blue was seen more times than orange and gray. So, what will the inference engine return? It will return blue. But you can control that. You can say, get random. Don't always choose blue. So sometimes it would be creative and choose orange. Sometimes it might choose gray. Sometimes you can say, don't always pick the most popular one. All right, okay, pick the second popular one. All right, so orange is the answer. The thing is, artificial intelligence, large language models, they're not consistent. They're not deterministic. You ask for the color of sky, you are not always going to get blue. It's interpreting. It's inferring from the knowledge base what the answer could be, and it's using probability and weightings to figure out what the next word it will give you is. So remember that. Rubik's Cube, that's your answer. That's what we store. Now, n-dimensional Rubik's Cubes, as you start to get into what you hear about billions of tokens, that dimensional space grows very, very, very large, okay? And that's why they can encapsulate an entire universe of data in their token space. I like to call it a token space. I don't know what the accurate word for that is, but I like to call it token space. All right, so you have your token space. Now, the thing about, so you're getting the hang of this hopefully now. Now, here's the other interesting example I will give you. It's not able to, it doesn't mimic. It doesn't reflect back. It's not a Xerox. It's not a photocopier. Okay, you put something in, it's going to give you an estimation of what you put in back. Let me show you how that works. Here's a sample of a picture I put in myself. Now imagine I put in more than just this picture. I trained a model on what I look like. So you would think the model has a lot of information or enough information that if I said, this is me, put me in a picture of an office with a cityscape behind me, it would take this and just figure out what I look like. And you know, we've seen where it's been able to shift pictures or bring people to life, right? But what it isn't able to do is replay back exactly what it sees. So when I say put me in an office setting with a skyline behind me, it thinks that's me. And I said, no, that's not me. Here's a couple more pictures. Let's try this again. This is you. No, that's not me either. Here's a couple more pictures of me. See if you can get it right this time. Thinks that's me. So as you can see, you know, it's, again, non-deterministic. And that's important to understand, because what it does really well is creative. It's in many regards a creative machine. It's not a process engine by default. It's not going to give you 2 plus 2 is 4 every single time. In fact, it might give you 2 plus 2 is 6 because it doesn't actually have a calculator that it uses. It doesn't understand math. It understands proximity of tokens. So the final piece of the puzzle is, how does this thing help me in supply chain management and manufacturing when everything in my universe needs to be precise? And that is the beauty of this. It's where we get to integration and automation around the supply chain, the reduction of waste. So what I can ask an LLM to do is write a piece of code. And it can do that because it's real good at content generation. Coding is one of the things it does really well. I can ask it to write a program to look at how many, what were my top 3 best-selling items for the past month, and make sure that I have at least 6 of each of those in my store, in every one of my stores. And if I tell it, I give it a tool that connects me to my data set, my application, via API, via database direct connect. However I give it access to that data and I tell it, here is your tool to go look up that information for what was the best-selling piece. And then here is the tool that you use to be able to look up the inventory in each store. Then it will figure out how to write that code. It will figure out how to go read the data and analyze it. And it will produce a repeatable, deterministic product that you can then run and every week to make sure that your top-selling items are available. And to let you know, you're going to expand it very easily by changing the prompt a little. Now, make sure that I have enough of them in the warehouse to be able to support at least 3 months of inventory of replenishment. How is that for a buyer? If you gave that tool to a buyer, what could they do with it? And that is where this stuff starts to get exciting. And that's just the start. But before you can get there, you got to make sure your data's right. You got to make sure your processes are right and that they can be the tools that the large language model needs in order to execute that. And that's where I come in. That's where my business is to come in and help you do that. All the way through from idea, this is what I'd like to tell the thing to do, to boom, here it is. Now it works, you can give it to a buyer. So here's what we're going to do. This is not going to be about me every week telling you how great my company is, how great I am. That was this show. That was me and you getting to know each other. You know who I am. You know I got the chops. What I want to do and what I'm going to do going forward is I'm going to have guests on. I'm going to invite some of the smartest people in the supply chain world to talk about today's supply chain problems. What is still messy? What can we do? What can get better? How can we reduce waste? Where do we have complexity that doesn't need to be there? And then I'm going to help figure out how to use AI to, you know, I don't want to say fix, but to provide solutions to those problems that my guests bring with them and to understand how different parts of supply. And these people are going to come from various parts of the supply chain world. They may be a supply chain executive in a company. They may be a vendor. They may be a consultant. And so again, hit subscribe. I hope you continue listening, and I'll be back with you soon with my first guest, who, I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you.